Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Harriet lived a busy life in Nova Scotia, raising her family and shooting documentaries, but something happened and life became unbearable, and she drifted away from her husband and kids. Her daughter, Lena, had vague, fuzzy memories of happier times, so she set out to find her mother and document it on film. But the happy days were long gone. She found her mom in and out of prison, addicted to drugs, detached, drifting, homeless, and living on the harsh streets of Toronto. What, Lena wondered, did the future hold for Mom and Me? Mom and Me is also the name of a tough, tender, and highly personal documentary that's having its world premiere at Toronto's Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival. It was directed by Lena McDonald and is all about her mom, Harriet Durham. Mom and Me is her first feature, 10 years in the making, and I'm very pleased to have both Lena and her mom here with me in studio to tell us more about it. Hi, Lena.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Harriet.
How are you, Daniel?
I'm great. And first, can I just say, I've been following this, full disclosure, I've been following this for 10 years, and I believe I played a small part in getting this going. So it's so wonderful to see you guys again.
It's great to be here.
So just to start out, Lena, what were your first impressions of your mom when you encountered her as an adult?
I mean, it wasn't black and white. I was witness in part to the spiral downwards. You know, she would pop in and out of my life. I would go to visit her in Nova Scotia. She would come to visit in Toronto. And I did see her life get worse. I saw her get worse. I saw the downward spiral. So it wasn't a complete shock. But I guess that would be dishonest because I still was a young girl. I was 14 going on 15 when I first went down to the streets of Toronto and to the homeless community to look for my mom. And there was still a little bit of her left at that point. She was still sort of there. She was still somebody that I could connect with and know, but that didn't last long. Swiftly, she became something else.
So, Harriet, I know this is a rough time, but describe as well as you can what your life was like during this period.
Anybody looking from the outside would think that it was rough, but nobody can know how rough it was living on the streets of Toronto and the danger and the dirt and the it's so hard. Like right now, it makes me emotional to think about it because I don't think I could survive very long out there again. I just couldn't. It's such a horrible existence. The homelessness, waking up with your pants frozen on the bottom, and there's a lot of damage done to your health, to your mental health, to everything. And when you get recovery, it's hard for all that stuff to come back. Like your manners are gone. Everything's gone.
Tell me what a typical day was like when you were living on the streets.
Well, I can't even say when you woke up because sometimes you'd be up for a week and 10 days at a time. The first thing you think about is how you're going to get your wake up, you know?
Where were you when you would wake up?
Behind buildings or in stairwells. Or sometimes I'd be lucky enough to have somebody let me stay at their place, you know? But then that required me to go out and do things that are more morally prohibited, like, you know, just horrible work in the streets.
Like what?
Shoplifting, like prostitution, to get the drugs for the other person that owned the place, too, is a kind of your rent.
What was the drugs?
Crack and anything we could get.
What did you get? Did you get anything positive from the crack? Like, what did it make you, how did it make you feel?
Made me forget. You know, there's not an addict on the streets that I've ever encountered that didn't have a lot of pain.
And how long did that freedom from the pain last with crack?
Oh, maybe 5 minutes. You know, maybe 5 minutes. You know, you can buy a piece of crack for $10. But if you have to stay high for 24 hours, you have to have some kind of game to get the money to do that, right? And like if anybody says they ever got free crack, they did something to get it because nobody gets free crack. Nobody.
So, Harriet, when you saw Lena again, she started following you with a camera, with Joe and a camera. How did that make you feel?
Anyway, the reason I even let her do it is I thought she'd give me money for crack.
Huh.
You know, so it was pretty selfish when I, you know, did I think it was going to go this far? No. Am I proud of her? Yes. Am I a little ashamed that the world is going to see that truth? And it's honest. It's the truth. That's my truth then, but I have a new truth now. And that's why I'm okay with it now.
Tell me about the change. When did the change take place in your life from being an addict, living on the streets, to a better existence?
Well, I went to rehab once, and I stayed sober for a little time. Couple of months anyway, and then Lena had got me a beautiful apartment, and everything was there. There was even a carton of cigarettes, and everything was there for me to move in, food, everything. Carton of cigarettes, like she was taking care of me, and I relapsed. And then we just made a decision really, like one day we said, okay, I'm moving, I have to leave, because it was a friend of Lena's apartment, right? Her apartment belonged to a friend of hers. Anyway, so I left, and I went back to the streets. But then when I went to Grand House,
what is Grand House?
Grand House is a rehab up on Avenue Road, it's a 6-month program. Because I'm going to tell you, anybody, all these 21-day programs, you're not going to get much help. You're not going to get much help in 21 days. It took a long time to get to where you were as an addict. So 21 days is not enough time to start looking inside and seeing yourself and, you know, and trying to get better. So, like, maybe some people can do it, but I know I probably need it more than 6 months.
I'll say that the period between my mother's first attempt at sobriety and the relapse was probably the darkest period of my life, and I think hers. And it changed her. Having a taste of wellness and then losing it just made us both so angry. And it was a really tough period for us. And I thought, that's it. I have to write this person off because it had just become such a negative force. And we really struggled during that period, and you really struggled. You were a changed person.
What I can say about that time was that I realized that my worst day of recovery was better than my best day of being high. You know, and that's the lesson I learned from that time, one of the relapse, right? And I got a little taste of my family back, and I got a little trust back and everything. And then, so when I relapsed, I could see all that slipping away really hard. Anyway, and people say that when you relapse, that you go back at it harder. I can attest to that. I went back harder, and it didn't take as long to get down to rock bottom again.
So, as a documentary filmmaker, you want to get the good footage, you want to tell the story, but this is your mom. How did you handle the split between filmmaker and daughter?
Well, I was lucky that for a large part of the film and a large part of the footage that makes up the film, the cameraman was also my boyfriend. And that was helpful because it meant that everybody could kind of let their guard down. And so I would just say to him at night, get everything. Don't ever hold back. At times when I'll tell you turn off the camera, don't listen to me. Leave
this
it on.
Joseph Finkelman,
yeah. And I would just say to him, leave it on, leave it running. And he knew us so well, he could anticipate how we might respond to a certain situation. So we always knew where to put the camera. And quite apart from that, he had a natural eye. He'd never been a camera person before. He'd been an AD and been in film, but he did an incredible job. So I had him to lean on, which was a part of how I got the good footage and was able to, like, kind of not shy away or, you know, anyway, he was very helpful. But then quite apart from that, I want to say I have a lot of really brutal footage and it's not in the film. Some of it is, but most of it isn't. And I thought I would spare people. This is not a film about degradation. I think some of the stuff you see is pretty brutal and pretty raw. And I think you get the picture. So even though I got the really good footage and the stuff that everybody's kind of salivating for, the stuff that people don't have access to, it's not really what the film is about. And
what is the film about?
It's about our relationship. It's about love. It's about the tenacity of love. It's about family. It's about mothers and daughters. And it's about connection and how badly we all need it. And of course, there's a piece about vulnerability and women and poverty. But I really didn't want the kind of poverty and the degradation to take over. So as much as I, you know, tried to get the best footage. Sometimes the best footage was just us sharing a laugh.
Harriet, coming in, I was walking through the studio, and you said you were last in a radio studio when 30 years ago you worked for CHFI. How does it feel now to be back within media?
Well, you know what? The unfortunate part is this documentary, I feel infamous. Like I have a little bit of fear about how I will be received now because it's a pretty dark story. But anyway, like I said, this is my new truth. And I think that I'm loved. And like even when I go in the coffee shops, they tell me I rock. And, you know.
You
anyway,
do.
Yeah. So I'm okay with it. I agreed to do this interview, but I told Lena, very limited exposure I want. That's fine. Her day. This is her day.
For sure.
She's the star here.
Well, tell me about how you felt seeing your daughter with the camera when you used to be behind the camera.
Anyway, I think we have enough talented people in my family now. That, like, Dad's a writer. I was a filmmaker. Lena, Renee's trying to do editing. So we have enough in the family to do our own films now. Anyway, but I also know the pitfalls of being in the film business, and I worry about her. And you can get caught up in a lot of, like right now, like a lot of people that get sober want everything they lost back. And I know a lot of people that strive, even the kind of dog they had, what they drove, everything, right? I don't want any of that back. I don't want, because there's a lot of addiction in the film business. There just is. And so I don't want all that back. I'm happy to take a back seat now and let the people around me do all the, I would greatly help, but I don't want to be a part of all that anymore.
Well, Lena, how do you see yourself as her daughter?
You mean in relation to being a filmmaker or just in general?
In general and as a filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I think that I always rejected the idea that we were much alike, but I think it's probably pretty hard to deny at this point, as much as I would like to. We're both pretty raucous and opinionated and tough and loving and generous. And, you know, there's no doubt that as a teenager, I was trying to connect with my parents and make them proud and pick up in their traditions by being a filmmaker. But it was something that I didn't have any choice over. I think I was born that way. I started writing poems when I was four. Like, it's our culture. It's our family culture, and it's the larger culture we come from on the East Coast. So for me, I feel very proud to get to continue in those traditions and really proud to get to share it with her.
And do you think you two are a functional mother and daughter again?
Huh. What do you think?
Sorta. I'm a great Molly maid because, you know, not only do I help her, like, get through school and everything, but I think I'm a great mother now. I think I'm a great mother. Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I think we've flipped the roles back and forth all day long throughout the day. I don't think we've totally shed the kind of roles of rescuer and casualty, but I do think that we have a pretty natural mother-daughter relationship. We've got kind of one of the things that I kind of love that the film starts to get into, and what I love about our life now is sort of like the mundanity, the her scolding me for swearing, the generation gap stuff, the cultural stuff, the stuff, the normal parent-child stuff. And I love it.
Harriet?
For a long time, Lena was a parent. She was the parent. She was the mother. Anyway, and so, well, now that I'm sober, it was a little tough for her to let go of that. You know what I mean? Anyway, but I think she has now. And I'm so proud of her. And
it's still tough. I'm a bossy boss.
Oh, you're a bossy boss.
But the result is an amazing documentary. And I'm so glad to see you guys back together again.
Yeah, really, really glad to be here. I'm really grateful for all your support, Daniel.
You can't see on the radio, but they just had a good kiss. So I've been speaking to director Lena McDonald and her mother, Harriet Durham. Thanks so much for talking with me, guys.
Thanks for having us, Daniel.
Lena's documentary, Mom and Me, is premiering at Hot Docs later this month. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.